here is with the overall title that you see in that section, the final Galilean campaign. Jesus is the man from Galilee. There's been popular songs, you know, 40 years ago written about that very idea. Most of his ministry was spent there in the north and around the shores of the Sea of Galilee. Amazing miracles, astonishing sermons. He was much more free to preach and teach up there because the religious leaders of his day were far to the south, there in Jerusalem and in the area of Judah, or Judea. And so it was such a sad thing that Jesus' arrival as the Son of the Living God, miracle-working preacher whose wisdom is unparalleled, you know, was effectively driven away from the people that should have been the most knowledgeable, the most familiar with the prophecies, and therefore more readily able to identify him, who should have welcomed him with open arms. He's really quite rejected. And so they've tried to kill him on more than one occasion. And while he certainly does not flee, he knows when his time will come. He has a mission to perform that is well understood, every phase of it. Nonetheless, it was not appropriate for him to spend the most of his time in Jerusalem or in the south. And so he has been up in the north for some time, but we are drawing to a close now as the larger portion of the Bible's New Testament's information is not necessarily revolving around Galilee. That's where he spent the most time. So, Matthew chapter 9, verse 35, bottom left there on page 94, Jesus was going about all the cities and villages, very mobile there in Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, the good news of the kingdom, healing every kind of disease, and every kind of sickness. And seeing the multitudes, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and downcast, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest." We're not really told, brethren, why the people are downcast and discouraged. If this is a function of the terribly poor leadership of the time, if there was in that area perhaps of Galilee a lower standard of living or something, you know, I'm just not sure what that is. God wanted us to know that the people were not thrilled with their lives, and they were looking for direction. They were hungry for some kind of a leader and teacher. As history has unfolded, as we look at various passages in Scripture and the wisdom that's revealed in them, and then look at history, you know, we see that the simple fact of the matter is that to the extent that people are blessed with a peaceful country, so they're not fighting wars, got all that kind of stuff going on, and they are a part of a powerful country, most likely those two are going to go together, borders are secure, so you don't have to worry about, you know, that kind of distress, and you're a part of a prosperous country, all your needs are being met, you're really quite comfortable, you're not fearing where the next meal is going to be coming from, you're not living in terror of disease and that sort of thing. When life is your bowl of cherries, people tend to have what happened to their faith. It tends to erode. Their interest in God wanes, apparently because their dependence upon God, their need for Him, is not quite so high in the physical realm. And so you get distracted. We saw that, of course, in Matthew chapter 13 with the parables. You have this amazing story, so interesting, it's become the most famous of all the parables, I believe. You know about the parable, or the sower, rather, going out to sow, and you have that third soil. The third soil is rich. The third soil is productive. The third soil has everything going for it. But that third soil gets choked out by what? Okay? Do weeds only grow in deserts? Do they not enjoy good fertile soil like every other plant? Sure they do. And so that's the problem, is that when you have all these physical blessings, you're easily distracted, less interested in
of your God. And this doesn't seem to be the case in Galilee, or at least they're hungry. Why they're hungry, I don't know.
Would the American people were more hungry? But, you know, at this point, it just distresses Jesus to see these people. And so in 36, he feels, top of page 95, he feels compassion. He sees this and he responds to this. He shares all the emotions and certainly the love. And so he sees they're like sheep without a shepherd. That suggests that the problem there with their being downcast would have to do, we presume, with their religious leaders. Now, maybe they're political leaders as well. Maybe they're oppressed by the Romans or whatever. You know, I'm not sure. But Jesus cares and sees in verse 37 that when those circumstances exist, then what? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And that looks to be directly related as well. To the extent that people are downcast and distressed, they've got these problems, they're going to be turning toward their God, but they are not finding in this area at this time people that know what they're talking about. And so there's not very many workers here, but there's sure a lot of people interested. So in 38, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. Beseech just simply means, what's the four-letter word? Pray. I want you, my disciples, you, to pray. I want you to pray to God about the harvest. I want you to recognize that it's a good time to be preaching. I want you to understand that we don't have enough workers to handle the need. So pray for workers. Now, brethren, I have long thought one of the most fascinating connections that you have in Scripture is often missed because, as you can see, that's where, arbitrarily, chapter 9 ends and a new chapter, 10, has been inserted. The reference material says chapter 10. So when people read before they fall asleep, you know, on Tuesday night, they get to the end of Matthew 9, and then they go to bed. They live a whole day. They go back to their reading, you know, for the evening and the next night, and what do? They start with chapter 10. And they miss this connection. Jesus sees the people are downcast. Jesus cares. Jesus sees good time to be preaching. Jesus sees there's not enough workers. So he says, pray for workers. And then what is the next thing he does? He makes them workers whether they're praying for it or not. He's not asking them to pray so that somebody else will do the job. What happens in 10:1? Having summoned his 12 disciples, he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. The names of the 12 are now given in verses 2 and 3 and 4. And then in verse 5, these 12, Jesus what? Pray, brethren, pray for a full harvest. Pray for workers. But you better fully expect what if Jesus' example here teaches us anything? You better be one of those workers too. Jesus is expecting more than just the prayer. So, here are these 12 apostles. They are given great authority in Matthew 10 and verse 1, subsequent to their instruction to be praying. They have power over unclean spirits. They can cast them out. They can heal every kind of disease, every kind of sickness. They are given great and enormous power and responsibility to get busy. Now, I hope I won't miss any of these, but having made such a big point out of it at the beginning of our study, in the Mark column on page 95, there you want to write demons number 8. 13 times in 16 chapters, Mark will mention demons. Well, Matthew mentioned them too in this case, but we've been keeping count in Mark's gospel where he has the greater focus. So make your notation there. That verse 7, power over the unclean spirits, is the 8th time that he's mentioned demons already there at the beginning of the 6th chapter of his gospel. Now, back to Matthew chapter 10 and verse 5, very bottom of that page 95 there. These 12 Jesus sent out after instructing them, saying, do not go in the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter any city of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. pray about this harvest, pray that there will be workers for this harvest, now become workers in this harvest, I give you power to do this work, Jesus says to the 12 apostles whose names were given, but I'll not read for the sake of time. And then the specific instruction, you are not, at this point in world history, to go to the Gentiles. You 12 have not been given responsibility with regard to those outside the kingdom of Israel. You are not to be going to the Jews. And for that matter, in the rest of that verse, and spilling over onto page 96, don't even enter any city of the what? Samaritans. Well, Samaritans are half Jew and half Gentile, but even the Samaritans now are being restricted from the purview of the apostles' responsibility. Now, I'd like to suggest that here in the harmony, and when you get home as well, that I'm going to make a pretty big point here a little bit later in Matthew chapter 10. One of the pivotal moments in my Bible studies, and so I'm going to want to make a pretty big point here in just a few minutes, and there will be a number of kind of clues or evidence that we're going to put together to reach what is not a commonly embraced understanding of what Jesus is talking about in this passage. So I would have you highlight verses 5 and 6 in Matthew. I'll have you highlight another passage in a minute, a third passage, but for right now, highlight verses 5 and 6 and note that we have a particular event unfolding that will involve a particular time frame. And that time frame has to do with the period when the 12 are not going to Gentiles or Samaritans. Now, for those of you that are familiar with your book of Acts, we are not going to see anybody going specifically, charged or practicing, preaching to Samaritans or Gentiles until we're well into the book of Acts. So already, Jesus is restricting the apostles to a particular territory. We're going to have some additional clues or pieces of information that might lead us to kind of a surprising conclusion here in a little bit. So just tuck that away for now. Where are the 12 going? Lost sheep of the house of Israel. Does that include the Samaritans? No. Does that include the Gentiles? No. Now verse 7. As you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. That is to say, the kingdom of heaven is near. The literal word there is ingus. And it's translated near. I don't have any objection to that translation. At hand is more, you know, kind of a colloquial expression, but the single word ingus means near. So this kingdom of heaven that you're preaching is not far away. It's not all that far off. Verse 8, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons, freely you received, freely give. So in a very specific moment in time, and in some particular ceremony even perhaps, at least including these instructions, Jesus empowered these men with every power, I guess, that there is, up to and including the raising of the dead. Now, more restrictions in verse 9. Do not acquire gold or silver or copper for your money belts, or a bag for your journey, or even two tunics, or sandals, or a staff, for the worker is worthy of his support. Now, gold and silver and copper, of course, is money, or at least, you know, a monetary system you can trade. And in 10, bag for your journey. If you're not to take a bag for your journey, what kind of journeying then would that suggest? Not very far. And more, even two tunics. You're going to be gone so long, you need to prepare for several sets of clothes even. Well, you don't have to do that. Or sandals, or a staff. Now, what is a staff? It's got two major functions for these guys, there's another function that you'd think of for various kinds of livestock, but laying that aside, what would the apostles be doing with a staff? It's quite literally a walking stick or a weapon, okay? And again, if you're in a general territory where you live and everybody has the same faith and religion and the same economy and everything is same, do you as a traveler have so much of a need for a weapon?
No. And you would take a staff on a journey only if your journey was going to be very far, for the walking stick part. Now, those are very, very helpful, especially when you're, coming up a hill. They give you arm muscles to help you as well to do, the ascent.
And so, Jesus is suggesting here, I think, not merely or only, though I have to be careful, because certainly a major lesson here is that they're to trust in what? Trust in their God. So you're not taking a whole lot of supplies. But there are also maybe more clues here about the nature of the mission that is assigned to the 12. So you guys aren't going to need these things. And that because, he tells us specifically in the end of verse 10, the worker is worthy of what? So to whatever extent you're going to need money, don't carry a bunch or bags or clothes and all that. When stuff wears out, then what? It'll be provided. And then, very specifically in verse 11, into whatever city or village you enter. Now, at this point, again, I just want to put a little bee in your ear, or in your bonnet, I guess. What cities might these be? But into what city or village you enter, inquire who is worthy in it, and abide there until you go away. Brethren, people have reputations. They're known if they're righteous, if they're interested in spiritual things, if they're churchgoers today. So you inquire and abide there. Just walk up and ask the guy if you can stay with him. And in 12, as you enter the house, give it your greeting / blessing. And if the house is worthy, let your greeting of peace come upon it. But if it's not worthy, let your greeting of peace return to you. And whoever does not receive you nor heed your words as you go out of that house or that city, shake off the dust of your feet. Truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for what? That city. What city? Cities that are identified as cities which, tell me loud, everybody, real loud, these are the cities that what? That the apostles are visiting. These are the cities that the apostles are visiting. And by the way, just think today, 2,000 years later, how many of the cities that would have been in Galilee at that time are still there today? There's a lot of them that are not there anymore. Chorazin is not there. Just for instance, Bethsaida is not there. Just saying. Okay? And several others that you read about are no longer there. Now, there's still cities there. Tiberias is still there. Capernaum is still there. But there are nobody living in the same dwellings. They're not living on the same streets. Even 2,000 years later, what's it like to be in those cities? Anything like it was in the first century? Totally different. So just something to think about. You apostles are going out. You are not going to the Gentiles. You are not going to the Samaritans. And you're going to be bestowing blessings on those that are worthy. That I want you to know, that's connected to a judgment. So highlight verse 15. It's another clue or point of interest. Truly I say to you, it's more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Huh. The cities that we're visiting are facing a judgment, and it'll be more tolerable for them in that judgment, Sodom and Gomorrah will be more tolerable for them if they don't receive who? You apostles, when you're walking around without what? Money, bags, walking sticks, houses, rentals, you're going to depend on God and the people in those cities upon which you are bestowing either a blessing if they're worthy or what? The equivalent of a curse when you withhold your peace. Now to verse 16. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore be shrewd as serpents, innocent as doves, but beware of men. They will deliver you up to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues. And you shall even be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. Highlight that verse 18. Now let's think about it, starting at 16. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Well, that's not good. Who's he sending out? Who are the only people he's talking to? How many are there? 12 men. Do we know their names? They're given to us at the start of the chapter. I'm sending them, Jesus says, you guys out. I want you to be shrewd as serpents, so you got to be smart, but you better be innocent as a dove is. You're going to do no harm to anybody. But beware, they're going to deliver you up to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues. Brethren, is that statement in verse 17 saying anything about what's going to happen to you personally 2,000 years later? I don't think so. We might say, well, you know, 2,000 years later, we're still Christians. Are any of you apostles? Do any of you have miracle-working powers, which is another clue? Are any of you going about these cities making sure you don't go into a Samaritan city or a Gentile city? You see, what I'm highlighting and I'm trying to emphasize here is this is not a general command to all Christians, is it? Are there any Christians even present? Not yet. 12 apostles, Jesus still living. We're some time away from even the creation of the kingdom. And in verse 18, though, you who, in verse 18, apostles shall even be brought before what? Governors, and you apostles will be brought before what? Kings, for my sake, it'll be because of your commitment to Jesus, as a testimony to whom? Two groups he just named, governors and kings. And it'll also be a testimony to who? Gentiles. Gentiles are going to be hearing about this. You will be brought before governors and kings, but big question here. What kind of governors and kings? Are they Gentile governors and kings? And be careful. We're going to leave that question unanswered right now. Are they Gentile governors and kings in the sense of being an emperor in Rome or somebody over in Galatia or something like that? Well, you know, I have to wonder when I'm looking at all the pieces that are so specific, when this judgment's going to come in verse 15, when this persecution's going to come, who's going to be suffering this persecution? Now watch in verse 19. But when, top of page 97 now, and note that from verse 16 on, who else in the Gospels is telling us about this moment in time when Jesus gives this commission to these apostles? Only Matthew. So this whole page, a lot of information, Matthew's the only one that tells us. When they deliver you up, verse 19, do not be anxious about how or what you will speak, for it shall be given you in that hour what you are to speak. For it is not you who speak. It is the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Now you have to be kind of careful. I've already had you highlight verse 18. I want you also to highlight 19 and 20, but for a different reason than verse 18. So you might want to use a different, you know, designator there, a square instead of clouds or circles or whatever. But 19 and 20 also give us a clue about who's involved, about what is involved, and especially about when these events are going to be taking place. Does verse 19 and 20 give any information to you that will have a direct application in your life? No. Does the idea in those two verses apply to you and me today? No. Now, does that mean I'm going to tear them out of my Bible? No, they help me a lot as we're seeing. It's important. I'm going to have you highlight them. We're going to learn some things here. But I make a terrible mistake if I open up my Bible one of these days to Matthew 10, verses 19 and 20 and say, oh, what a wonderful promise that God has given me.
So that, if I as a Christian ever get in trouble with the authorities in Eugene or the county or the state or the country, then I don't even need a Bible. Because when it comes time for me to testify, what will happen? Miracle. Inspiration. Revelation. I will be filled with the Spirit and given the very words that I am to utter.
Do those two verses have any application to me in my life? No. 19 and 20 are limited exclusively to whom? Apostles who have been given great power and authority. Will I ever raise the dead, heal the sick, cleanse a leper? These things don't apply to anybody other than the people that Jesus applied them to. Who did he apply them to? The apostles only. Now highlight verses 21, 22, and 23, and here comes our surprise. Brother will deliver up brother to death. Is that talking about our future? And a father his child. Is that lying ahead? Children will rise up against parents. Should you fear your offspring? Cause them to be put to death. That's a pretty terrible thing for a child to do. Is it your children you're supposed to worry about? You'll be hated by all on account of my name, Jesus told how many men? 12. Did he tell any women this? No. And it is the one who has endured to the what who will be saved. The one who endures to the end will be saved. 23. But whenever they persecute you in Eugene, flee to Portland. For truly I say to you, you shall not what? Now let that sink in for a minute. I think it's one of the most neglected verses in the Gospels. It's been amazing to me since the day that my eyes bugged out of my head when I read that. It just had escaped me for years. And I read this 23rd verse, and it changed everything. It brought it into context. It established parameters and limits. It taught me not to just willy-nilly apply things however I wanted outside of their context. Whenever they persecute you in this city, he's had much to say about various cities and where they were, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you shall not finish the cities of Israel until the Son of Man, what? How many people will you meet in Eugene if you went out and did a survey today who think that's talking about judgment at the end of the world? And they have absolutely no doubt that verse 15 back on the bottom of the preceding page is too. Is it? Absolutely not. Jesus said in verse 23, to how many people? Male or female? Given what powers? To go to what people and not any others? Okay? And then, nature of the journey. They are finally told in verse 23, persecute you in this city, flee to the next. You will not finish the cities of Israel until the Son of Man does what? Now, brethren, almost universally, what do people think the expression Son of Man comes refers to? End of the world. Everybody just goes, whoop, end of the world. Why? Sodom and Gomorrah, end of the world. Is that true in this chapter? Even a little? No. And it just rocked the earth beneath my feet some 35 years ago when I realized that I had been just misapplying these statements. dropping out of the sky into Matthew 10, grabbing this, grabbing that, and trying to apply it to us today. That is no kind of good Bible study. It's just wrong. When events are limited by the context, then we should remember to limit them by the context, henceforth, and forever. Now, look at this verse 22, brethren. You who, 12 apostles, will be hated by all on account of my name. But it is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. What end do most people think that verse is talking about? The end of the planet. Any day now, read the newspapers. Premillennialism, Left Behind, would have you believe that. There's an end coming, and the one who endures to that end, all the persecution, the suffering, do what I tell you to do, going to be hauled before governors and kings and all of that, but if you endure clear to the end of that, you will be what? Saved. Now, the word saved never existed in the Greek language until Matthew wrote his gospel. And then it was invented by God to be a special word that can only refer to going to heaven at the end of the final judgment, right or wrong. It's totally wrong. You know, they had preservatives back in those days, too. And when you saved your vegetables or saved your jam, jelly, and whatnot, you'd use what word? You'd use the same word. It's not a special word. It's been around for a long time. It needs saved. Same way it needs saved in our language.
Saved in a wide variety of ways that you have to define based on circumstances in the conversation, in the discussion, context. Now, we're pretty limited by this time, aren't we? We're talking about 12 men going to experience persecution while they're inspired, so they don't even have to think about what they're going to say, when they get hauled in front of kings, governors and kings, but it'll also be a message to the Gentiles. That is important. Gentiles will be observing this. Were they sent to the Gentiles? No, they were forbidden to go to the Gentiles. But Gentiles will take notice. And then in this time frame, journeys don't seem to be long. They don't have to prepare for them at all. They want a place to stay. They just walk over to any total strange Gentile's house in Ephesus, and he'll give them a room for the night, right? No, we're not talking about that. You will not finish the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. There's going to be an end. There's going to be a judgment. There's going to be a salvation. It'll be better for Sodom and Gomorrah when that day comes than for the cities that the apostles are what? Preaching to during the time of inspiration and miracles. Do you see all those things? How they relate to each other? Now, Matthew chapter 24. And you know what? I told you that I bound my harmony in with another New Testament, so I would always have my New Testament. I didn't think to look and see where Matthew 24 is in the harmony, because you don't have another New Testament in your thing. So everybody, Matthew 24 is going to be on page 202. So now, skip over to 202, where we're in the last week of Jesus' life now. And on page 202, you're going to be very familiar with this. We spent a lot of time on this. On 202, in Matthew chapter 24, right in the middle of the page, verse 1, that's not right. That's just completely wrong. They've just mislabeled that entirely, so they've got it wrong in their chart at the back, too. All right, everybody, actually, it's page 195. Isn't that interesting? I just discovered that. The chart in the back of your harmony, it tells you where to find given chapters, is incorrect in this case. And so, you know, I ran over there to 202. It's not there. What I'm looking for is page 195 for Matthew 24. Jesus came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out what? The temple buildings. Matthew 24:1, page 195, left-hand column. He answered and said to them, "Do you, who was present on this occasion? Exclusively the apostles. Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another which will not be torn down." And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your what? And of the what? End of the age." What were they asking about? The Son of Man coming to end an age. Now, as you turn the page to page 196, we're in Matthew 24 now, verse 9. "They will deliver you to tribulation, will kill you. You'll be hated by all nations on account of what?" Does that not sound like what he told those apostles in Matthew 10? Look at verse 14 on page 197 in the Matthew column. "This gospel of the what?" What were the apostles sent out to preach? The gospel of the kingdom. "Shall be preached in the whole oikumene," I won't have time to develop that, "for a witness to all the nations, and then what shall come?" The end will come. The end will come. Now turn over, you've heard the bell, so I do have to hasten. Turn over, brethren, to page 200. And on page 200, as you've just reading, straight through Matthew 24, without a break, look at verse 33. "Even so you," who are the only people he's talking to? 12 apostles. "When you," 12 apostles, "see how many of the things he's talking about in Matthew 24? All of them. When you see that, recognize that he is what? Engus. He is near. Right at the door. "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until" how many of these things take place? All of them. "Brethren, the end will come. In that generation, the end that Jesus is talking about will come in that generation." I just don't have the time to develop it. So everybody, come on back now to Matthew chapter 10. And look again now at verses 21 through 23. "Brother will deliver up brother to death." In Matthew 24, Jesus spent a lot of time talking about the great tribulation. Yes. "Father's child, children rise up against parents, cause to be put to death, to be hated by all men. It's the one who's endured to the what? The end," which they asked about, and he answered in Matthew 24, "would take place in that generation, will be saved." Saved how? Physically, brethren, I don't think spiritually at all. Because the point of Matthew 24 is, when you see all these things, what are you supposed to do? Flee the city, go to the hills of Judea. They were to get out of Dodge. We've studied all that before. Here's the connection to Matthew 10. "Whenever," verse 23, "they persecute you in this city, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not finish the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes." Now I'm just going to leave you with my last 60 seconds with just something to think about. In Matthew 28, when we get to the last few verses of this very same gospel, you will read about Jesus sending these men out, the same men, these 12. We usually refer to that as the Great Commission, and we embrace it as addressed to all Christians throughout all time. I don't think so. In history, uninspired, as well as what we can read in our Bibles, clear up to the destruction of Jerusalem, brethren, which of the 12 apostles were the apostles to the Gentiles? None of them. Who was the apostle to the Gentiles? Paul. Where were the 12
in Israel, busy about the work which they would not be able to finish in the cities of Israel before what comes? The end. What end is Jesus talking about in his generation in Matthew 10 and in Matthew 24? The end of those cities in Israel that are destroyed along with Jerusalem in 70 AD.
For sure. And so we just have to be careful, brethren, we don't make the same mistakes that, you know, our denominational friends do and lift things out of context and misapply them to events that were never in the purview of Jesus at the time in the context of the teachings from the class dismissed. Thank you.